Welcome to the Fantastic Pour, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And visiting the lounge from across the pond is the host of the brilliant podcast, The Amazing Spider-Man from the Beginning, Mr. Andrew Leyland. Andrew, welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. How are you doing?
I'm tickety-boo, Brett. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good, good, good. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being on the show. I got to say, I'm excited to have you. I've admired your work from afar. I'm a big fan of the Spider-Man podcast you do as well. I know you do the Overlook Dark Knight and then the Hate Kids Comics that you do with your son, which has got to make you so happy to have something to share with your kid like that. That's got to be just an amazing thing for you.
Yeah, it's interesting to go back and listen to the old ones when he was 15, 16 years of age, and now he's just turned 30.
Wow. So you've been doing this for a
yeah,
while.
That sound, I have, yeah, that sound you heard was me just turning into dust, like Buffy's just staked me.
Yeah, well, again, I'm really happy to have you. I finally worked up the nerve, to ask the bartender to send you a drink. So to have you on this, or in this case, I asked Shag to get us in touch, more or less, which is
You could have just asked me. I'm not precious. Lots of people do just because of the shows. Always happy to hear from people, and lots of people do just text me out the blue and say, "Hey, I enjoyed that. That's good," and I love that. That's nice, and quite a lot of them you end up just chatting to because the comic book pool is a very small one, and we all love them. We all love the medium. We may love different things within that medium, but we all are a big fan of Four Color Fun. And, so that instantly gives us something to enjoy. And if there's one thing I've got out of the podcasting thing, it's basically finding a tribe. I didn't grow up with anyone who loved this stuff like I do. So it took me well into my 30s when we started doing this show with Michael to find lots of other people that love the same things that I love. And most of them are on the other end of a microphone. But, the world's a much smaller place these days, thanks to stuff like this, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I'm kind of in the same boat. I was the same way. I had a couple friends that like comic books a little bit, but weren't as much of a collector as me growing up. So I was sort of, it was kind of this thing I did on my own, with my, instead of, it was more like with my other friends, it was sports and stuff like that. But, I always, since I was little, always enjoyed the comic books. And you're right, it wasn't until I was well into my adulthood that I found people with a similar interest. And you're right, a lot of them are on the other side of a microphone these days. But but that is cool. That is cool.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't matter anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't. So
friendship is universal.
Yes, it is. So this is going to be dropping right around Christmas time.
Happy Christmas, everybody.
Yes. So now are you enjoying the holiday season? I've always felt that the English have this reputation for really going hardcore into Christmas. Is that the case, or is that just sort of a myth?
No, that's pretty true.
Yeah.
It is a hardcore. It starts on what we call Mad Friday, which is normally the Friday before Christmas when everyone finishes work.
Okay.
For Christmas, because by and large, other than retail, and I always feel really sorry for retail people, genuinely, especially that they have to go to work at 6:30 the day after Christmas Day when we're all still recovering from our hangovers.
Ugh.
We normally finish work on Mad Friday, and literally we shut down for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Most places, like education, which is where I work, other places shut completely. Councils, everything else, we have 2 weeks off, and for the most part it's just an excuse to drink copious amounts for 2 weeks non-stop. Crimbo limbo is my favorite part of the year. I love crimbo limbo.
What is that?
Crimbo limbo is the bit in between Boxing Day, which I understand you guys don't have.
We don't. That's the day after Christmas, correct? The 26th?
Yeah, day after Christmas is also a bank holiday. So we get Christmas Day and Boxing Day is everybody is off, apart from those unfortunate people who work in retail and public services like the police and the NHS.
Sure.
They obviously have to be in work, but most everyone is off completely. And then Crimbo Limbo is the bit in between Boxing Day and New Year's Day where nothing is happening. Nobody's at work. So basically the streets are just rammed with people going to sales to buy bargains. And pubs, Irish bars, do astonishingly well. over Primbo Limbo, as you can well imagine. So, and that's my favorite time of the year. There is nothing to do. You have nowhere to go. I just love that week.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That sounds wonderful. So now, are you like, as far as gift giving and things like that, is it Christmas Day? Is it Christmas Eve? Is it sort of sprinkled
Christmas Day.
throughout? It's Christmas
Nope.
Day.
It's
Okay.
Christmas Day.
Christmas
Michael,
Day.
the son I do Hey Kids with, is like steadfast. He does not have any truck with that giving gifts on Christmas Eve bollocks. He's not down with any of that. It's Christmas Day all the way.
All right.
He likes looking at his presents and feeling them
Yeah, right.
and trying to get an idea of what they are, but no, they do not get touched till Christmas Day.
That's always interesting. I'm always curious about, how what the differences are, and what the similarities are. And I'd say it sounds like it's fairly, similar. I know, I'm a graphic designer, so basically I, all my clients go basically radio silent, basically after midway through December, unless they need something, desperately, like right before the end of the year. And then I don't hear from them until, mid-January or something like
It
that.
takes them that long to recover.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we should probably get on with the show here. So sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things: choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. So, Andrew, please tell our friends in the lounge your chosen beverage and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
Spider-Man, which I'm sure will be a shock to everybody. Everyone who listens to this who has any inkling of who I am will be going, yeah, okay. That was a bit of a no-brainer. And anyone who doesn't know me will be pleased because Spider-Man has not been on your show yet.
No, he has not. And let me, as I'm picking myself up the floor from shock,
You sucky git.
can you explain to us, as if you haven't done this before, why you chose Spider-Man?
There's 42 episodes of Amazing Spider-Man from the very beginning. Go and listen to them. I love Spider-Man. He is my all-time favorite fictional character. It is largely more, I came for Spider-Man, I stayed for Peter Parker. It's the Peter Parker soap opera of it all that what drew me in. I think the first 38 issues, two annuals, Amazing Fantasy 15, are the Bible of Marvel comic books, for good and ill. You know, you can get into the arguments about who did what and how much Ditko was doing versus what Lee was doing and how much Ditko was credited for that. And that's a conversation for a completely different podcast. But I think that series, those 38 issues, those two annuals and Amazing Fantasy 15, they broke the mold of what a superhero character could be. And pretty much everything that followed was chasing that. Every teenage superhero that came after Spider-Man is emulating Spider-Man in some way.
Yeah, I it's hard to disagree with any of that. So, and I think I've heard you say that you would have been perfectly content if after issue of Amazing Spider-Man issue 99, if the series just ended there and that was the end of it. That was the end of Peter Parker's story. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is absolutely spot on. I always
Yeah.
encourage people, go and read that issue so you get a full idea of what I'm saying. In
Yeah.
that issue, Peter grows up. He accepts full responsibility for what he's doing. He decides he's going to downplay the Spider-Man part of his life. He goes to the Bugle and gets a job. He's not a freelancer anymore. He demands a salary gig. He's on the verge of proposing to Gwen Stacy. If you're going to end the strip, that is where you'd end it. You may do an issue 100 that wrapped it all up completely, but for the most part, you could end it there and never read anything else. And you've got a complete story of a boy growing up to be a man. Because that essentially is one of the things I think Spider-Man is about. It is about maturity. It's going from being a teenager to adulthood. And the more he futs with that, the less it becomes what that character was. And the problem with that, though, is issue 100 happens and it's the silly six arms thing, which is fun in its own way. It has its moments, and the introduction of Morbius is a nice little horror infusion into the to a strip that hadn't previously been a horror strip. But then when Stan comes back after having a couple of issues off to do other things, he completely forgets that he did issue 99. He completely forgets all that wonderful character development, and we just go back to the stuff we were doing in the John Buscema era, where it's spinning its wheels. And I always feel that somewhere along the line, the creators on that strip around that point lost their nerve, and they prevented themselves from taking that next step, because one of the flaws, I think, with American comic books is you are in a perpetual second act. And
Yes,
this is
that's
not
true.
something, this isn't something that happens in European comic books and manga. You know, manga may be 300 volumes long, but it will end. And issue 99 is as near as damn it as you got to Peter becoming an adult and accepting adult responsibilities and moving on with his life. And if you stop there, like I say, you never have to read anything again. You've got a complete story.
All right. That's really interesting. And when you were talking about that, I can't remember where I first heard you say that, but I was like, wow, that's true. And then I went back. I've been sort of rereading the early issues, some of which I had read before in trades or what have you. So others I hadn't, but I went on, Marvel Unlimited, started rereading them all as you were doing your podcast. And I can see exactly what you're talking about. It really is just an entire capture. And like you said, you could have done like an issue 100 where it's a, I don't know, a clip show or something like that, or you get the Animal House scene at the end where it says what happens to everybody,
A little caption saying Peter Parker grew up to be Gwen Stacy, married Peter, and they had three children. That kind of
stuff
thing,
like that. Flash Thompson goes to Vietnam for the 75th time and shot by his own
Mary
troops or
Jane
something like
becomes a
that.
dancer in Broadway.
Stuff like that.
That kind of thing.
Yeah,
That's
that
because
would have
that's
been
another
cool.
beautiful thing as well. If you read those strips, this modern day interpretation that a lot of modern readers have of Mary Jane being the one, that's from the films, man. That's not from the comics. If you read those comics, Peter barely tolerates her. He thinks she's flighty. He thinks she's lackadaisical. He thinks she's not got a straight bone in her body. He's not interested in her at all. He thinks she's stunningly beautiful, which she is, but that's as far as his interest goes. He has only got eyes for Gwen. But the interesting thing is, if you read in between the lines of that strip, Mary Jane's got a life away from Parker's little inner circle. There are entire issues where she goes away. She's the only one who doesn't have a scholarship. So she's paying her way through college herself, which is why she has all these side gigs as a dancer. That's the comic I want to read. What was Mary Jane up to whilst Peter was doing his stuff? There's a brilliant comic to be made there about a young woman struggling to pay her way through college. She wants to be a dancer slash performer. I have some experience of this because that's what my daughter is. That's what my daughter does for a living. And the amount of drama she tells me that goes behind the scenes, you could mine that easily.
That's very true. That's very true. That would be a great thing instead of giving her superpowers and stuff like that. Now maybe do something along those lines would be pretty fascinating. Now, do you currently read like do you still read Spider-Man?
I still read Spider-Man.
You do.
I can't quit it. I cannot. I've tried a couple of times, and it just like The Godfather, it just keeps pulling me back in because I have to know what's going on with him. Yeah, it's like checking on an old friend, and sometimes the path that they're on isn't necessarily one that you think is good for them. But you'll still check in on them and still make sure that they're okay and all of that stuff. And I don't think he's been on the right path for about a decade at this point. But that's just me. Other people may be vibing on it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's he's I have a real soft spot in my heart for Spider-Man because that was the first comic book I ever had a subscription to that I like got in the mail when I was a kid. And it was like the Romita Jr. days. It was, I think the first issue was like right that was the Juggernaut storyline, the
Oh,
two-part
what a place
Juggernaut
to
one.
come in, man.
That was like the first ones I got, and I was just like, wow, so I'm hooked, and I had it, through a subscription for a couple of years, and it was just kind of, I still went to comic stores, but it was just kind of fun to get one in the mail, it was just kind of a fun thing every year, every month. And I did that for years, and then I sort of drop in and out of Spider-Man these days. I'll check in, I'll read a couple storylines, especially if I hear something good about it, and then I'll go away and I'll check again, so it's just sort of, it's coming gone with me, but who doesn't love Spider? My kids love Spider. My youngest is crazy about him.
All kids love Spider-Man. I don't know what it is about him that kids love him. They just do.
I think, part of it, and a lot of people have said this, is because he's you he could be anybody underneath the mask. You know, it's he wears a full body mask. You don't know if he's white or he's black or what he is. You know, and that sort of opens that up to a lot of freedom for kids, I think. You know, put on the mask and you could be Spider-Man. So,
Yeah, anyone can be a hero if they choose to be.
Well, we'll get back to Spider-Man soon, but in the meantime, why don't you tell us your beverage of choice?
I chose a Glenmorangie, 12 years. I'm a fan of most single malts, but I particularly like Glenmorangie and Glenfiddich. I've got it from the actual website. I've got it as a unique freshness from the same Highland spring water that we've used since 1887, which gives it its distinctive fruitiness. I like that line. I thought that line was pretty cool.
It is. It's amazingly pretentious and it's
Yes.
wonderful. It's wonderful at the same time. Absolutely.
Yeah, isn't it so wanky but quite accurate? So we'll give him a pass.
We will indeed. I went on their site. By the way, an alarming amount of Harrison Ford on their website. Have you seen
Yeah,
this?
he did a series of commercials, didn't he?
I guess he did. So if you want to see, if anybody wants to see Han Solo in a kilt, go to Glenmorangie's website, and you can see a lot of that. But yeah, it's one of we're gonna obviously do something with the Glenmorangie in just a moment. But before we go over any type of recipe or anything else, I wanted to give a little more information about Scotch whiskey in a segment I like to call Secret Porigins. So you see what I did there, Andrew.
I'm very impressed with your punnage.
Thank you. Thank you. That took a team of us to come up with that one. You know, it took
Took a team of you to
two late
brainstorm that,
night
didn't it?
meetings, some brainstorming, you know.
The entire Fire and Water Podcast Network sat down a room smoking, just banging your head
Ordered.
against the wall, going, "What can we call it, man?"
Ordered some pizzas. There were some hurt feelings, but we got through it, you know. I'm not going to say Shag cried, but I'm not going to say he didn't either. So anyway. All right, so the origin of Scotch whiskey. And thank you for scotchwhiskey.org.uk for research. Scotch whiskey has deep roots in Scotland's history and Gaelic culture. The term whiskey derives from the Gaelic language meaning water of life. The process of making scotch is a six-step process. One, malting the barley. Two, mashing it to a sugary liquid called wort. Three, fermenting the wort with yeast to create a low alcohol wash. Four, distill the wash in copper pots to make a high proof spirit. Five, mature the spirit in oak casks for at least 3 years. And then six, you bottle. Now, the earliest documentation recording of distilling in Scotland occurred in tax records from 1494. An entry lists eight bowls of malt to Friar John Corr, wherewith to make aqua vitae. This was enough malted barley to produce almost 1,500 bottles of a potent spirit. Now, from this, the Scottish Parliament wanted to get their beak wet, so the first tax Scotch was in 1644, which led to an increase in illicit whiskey distilling and bootlegging across Scotland. By the 1820s, more than half of the whiskey consumed in Scotland was from illicit distilleries. The Duke of Gordon, on whose land some of the best illegal whiskey was being produced, proposed in the House of Lords that the government should profit from the whiskey production as well, leading to the excise tax in 1823, which sanctioned the distilling of whiskey in return for a license fee and payments per gallon of spirit. Afterwards, smuggling died out almost completely. Up to this point, Scotch had been made with malt whiskey. In 1831, Aeneas Coffey invented the patent still, which enabled a continuous process of distillation, leading to the production of grain whiskey, a less intense spirit than malt whiskey. The lighter grain whiskey then blended with the more potent malts, expanding the appeal of Scotch whiskey. During the 19th century, big distillers, and you may recognize some of these names, like James Buchanan, Tommy Dewar, Johnny Walker, and James Shivas, took Scotch out of Scotland for the first time into the global market, as Scotch found a foothold across the world. Now, in the 1880s, the Phylloxera beetle devastated the French vineyards and wiped out wine and brandy production. Now, the French's misfortune was a boon to the Scots, as by the time the French vineyards recovered, Scotch whiskey had replaced brandy as the preferred spirit of choice. When prohibition was enacted in the US in 1920, whiskey was exempt as long as it was prescribed by a doctor for medicinal purposes. As you can guess, the wealthy and influential used this loophole to their advantage. Today, Scotch whiskey must, by law, be distilled and matured in Scotland in oak casks for at least 3 years and bottled at a minimum alcoholic strength of 40% alcohol by volume. Now, Glenmorangie, which we will be drinking, is a single malt Northern Highland Scotch produced in the village of Tain along the banks of the Dornoch Firth. Okay, so now it's happy hour. So let's make a drink. I call this, well, I don't know what else I'm going to call it. I'm going to call it Scotch because that's what it is. So there we go. So Andrew, I'm just going to let you take it away. Why don't you tell us the ingredients and tell us how to make this. Go ahead.
Well, it's a really complicated recipe that has been passed down from generation to generation through my family, which are Scottish on my granddad's side. So I am sharing with you here something that is deeply secret, and I hope you're not going to tell anybody.
My
Okay.
lips are sealed. Nobody
Excellent. That's what I wanted to
outside
hear.
of the Fantasta Lounge will know this recipe. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll let you in on this, right? You need one bottle of Glenmorangie, 12 years old. Older is also acceptable. One clean glass and whiskey stones. Not, I repeat, not, do not dilute my whiskey with water. Thank you very much. Secondly, you open the bottle of Glenmorangie. You pour a couple of fingers of the Glenmorangie into the glass. That is very tricky. Drop the whiskey stones in and drink it. Now, I know what you're thinking, and you're right. That seems a little bit simple, Andrew. Where's the cocktail? Where's the shakage? Where's the Tom Cruise of it all? No, don't, no, don't, no, don't, no, don't. No. We don't do any of that. We enjoy the whiskey. We savor the whiskey. We treat the whiskey like we would treat a lady. And I have also, for purposes of this show, just to keep it on topic, in addition to my pot whiskey glass with the stones in, which I have there, I also have a shot glass with Spider-Man on it, and I am going to send Brett a picture of that in just one moment after I neck my little shot glass.
Very good. Very good.
Oh, that was good.
I have mine right here. I don't have a whiskey stone, so I'm just doing it straight. That's good stuff. Anyway, Andrew just sent me the picture too. And I'm gonna do what's great in an audio
Put it in the
media
show
is I'm
notes,
gonna
dude.
take a look. I am gonna put in show notes. Oh, I love it. I love it. It's a great picture. I will put that in the show notes, absolutely. I assume that's like your typical work environment too. You have a Spider-Man comic, a shot glass, and your computer, right? Is
And a
that the
model of
day-to-day?
Erwolf, if you look just to the top left.
Your love of 80s dad shows is going to come into the show at a later time during this. So just to let you know. So anyway, so yes, that is our recipe this week. And it sounds a lot classier coming from a guy with his accent. So that's why I had Andrew do
Nobody ever refers to the
it.
Manchester Northern accent as classic.
Well, I'm a hick
Lots of
from
planets.
Pennsylvania originally. So yeah, it sounds
Yeah.
classy to us,
Okay. Well, lots of planets have enough.
All right. So Andrew and I are going to sip our Glenmorangie from the finest glassware as the winter snow falls and the holiday merriment fills the lounge. Now, perhaps we will play a rousing game of chess from Dr. Doom's collection. Everyone in the lounge is welcome to drink along and listen to this promo break.
I'm scaling this wall just as easily as I can walk. My fingers alone are adhering, supporting me.
The Amazing Spider-Man, created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, has conquered every medium, from newspaper strips to the silver screen. But he began his life in a pulp periodical destined for cancellation. Let's explore these beginnings together. The Amazing Spider-Man from the very beginning. A brand new podcast on Spotify.
Some sort of danger here, but what?
And we're back. Now, Andrew explained to me that chess does not, in fact, have the same rules as Stratego. So I may have lost. So
Hey,
when
a couple more of these, dude, it'll be strip.
So when I said I captured your flag, you seemed a bit disappointed in me. That's kind of when I figured out that, okay, maybe these are different things. So anyway, now that we've had a chance to savor our Glenmorangie, what do you think?
I love there's like a honey tang to it, and I love the way it burns the back of your throat when it slides down, and it feels like it should light your stomach up like ET. Oh, I genuinely, man, I love going out on my way at Christmas. My two best friends, Scott and Phil, and we go out and we basically just have a night where me and, because Scott is genuinely Scottish and owns a kilt. He actually has a kilt. And we just buy whiskey all night, and it's one of my favorite nights out because I'm getting on a bit now. I don't go clubbing anymore.
Well, me neither. Yeah, I don't get much time to club. But this is there's an old saying, there aren't enough O's in smooth to describe this. This is a nice this is a nice it's smooth, it's creamy. I'm definitely getting the citrusy, the orange and the lemon. You definitely get that. It's got that, you're right, it's got that nice quick burn, but just goes down so easy, and just kind of gives you that sense of warmth. It's a perfect look. It's a perfect winter drink.
It
Just
is
warms the
after
soul.
a cold evening, after a cold day, it is lovely to sit in an armchair with a drink, chatting with a buddy, reading Spider-Man comics.
Now, do you
And
ever? Sorry, I'm sorry.
Ryan
Go ahead.
had, sorry,
No, go ahead.
Ryan had scotch, didn't he? Ryan had a bourbon, sorry.
He had a yes, we did bourbon with
You did a
Ryan.
bourbon with Ryan. This is a little less, there's a little less hit to it than a bourbon, isn't there?
Bourbon has sort of a sweetness and a burn to it. Those are
Yeah,
kind
this
of the
is
two things.
silky, isn't it?
This is much smoother, and there's a little bit. It's not like a like an Islay. Is it ice Islay? Is that how you pronounce that? Like the kind of region? Okay. Those type of scotches will have that real peat. It doesn't have that real peatiness, but it does have a sense of that. It has a touch of that that you don't get in whiskeys. The whiskey will have more of the sweetness, while the scotch will have more of that sort of I don't want to say peatiness, but almost like a hint of almost smokiness or
Yeah,
warmth
there's a
to it.
smoky to it. You're right. There's a smoky and the bandit to it.
There you go.
And the
Yes.
smell. Have you smelled it?
Of course. Of course. I always smell it
Oh,
first. Yeah.
love that smell.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's great to sit by the end, who knows what we'll be talking about here. But
I may just go and get the bottle, dude.
I like the bottle too, and they kind of help you. They help you kind of like phonetically spell it out too, the way they have, because they have the Glen, then they have the Mo, then they have the Ron, then they have the G, so they have it sort of broken down into four parts on the bottle. It's an orange, it has an orange label, and then, like I said, just a large lettering follow at the bottom. It always has tells you what aged it is. So we're having the
And on the
12 right
picture
now.
of the bottle that I sent you, you can see me with David Hasselhoff and Kit. So,
What the hell? Where?
behind the bottle, it's slightly blurry in the bottle because obviously I'm focused on the bottle. But that photo in the background
Oh,
is
the first one
me.
you sent me. Okay, I see it.
Yeah,
I see it. Okay.
with David Hasselhoff and Kit.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. Yes, I do see that. Yes, we even got the Hoff involved here. I
Well,
know. I
everything's
know.
better with the Hoff.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Just ask the Germans. All right. Well, while we're enjoying our scotch in the Fantasta Lounge, how about some fine literature? Comic we'll be discussing that involves Spider-Man is Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, Volume 1, Number 67, publisher Marvel Comics, cover date June 1982, the on sale date March 16th, 1982, cover price 60 cents. The story title, Boomerang, the Killer Who Keeps Coming Back. Writer Bill Mantlo, sorry. Penciler Ed Hannigan. Inker Al Milgrom. Letterer James R. Novick. Colorist Bob Sharon. And editor Thomas DeFalco. Thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, for this information. Now, Andrew, would you like to tell our friends in the Fantastic Lounge what the story is all about?
Yes, I would. I'd also like to point out I was 9 years old when I bought this. This is the copy I bought off the stands.
We must be pretty much the exact same age, because I bought this off the stands too, and I was about 9 when I did it too.
Yeah. Mine has got the 25p, the diamond logo, because obviously I bought it here. So yours will probably have the proper logo, won't it?
Yeah, I didn't pull it out for this. I just read it
Oh,
on
I did. I've got the
Unlimited.
real comic here now.
Okay, well, you're a better man than I. Mine's buried somewhere.
Okay. The synopsis runs thusly. Boomerang is back, and he wants to increase his rep in New York City by eliminating a government witness, hoping to impress the kingpin of crime. This is a bad move, as the kingpin is instead really pissed off at Boomerang for killing a witness who had been bribed to provide false info to the feds. Oops. Spotting Spider-Man swing by, the kingpin sends Boomerang out to eliminate Spider-Man, knowing that he'll likely fail. Meanwhile, Peter Parker wakes up late and finds that everyone is mad at him. He's late for a TA work at ESU. Marcy Kane is really annoyed at him for ditching her study session the night before, and the Bugle wants him to take pictures at the scene of the government witness, a gig he has to pass up on because of his school commitments. Fed up, Peter yells at the next phone caller before realizing it's Aunt May checking in on him. Oops again. On top of all that, his Spider-Man costume is torn up from fighting Electro, so he has to sew it back together before he can leave. His day doesn't get any better when he finally makes it to Empire State University, where Peter finds the pressures mounting up. His professor yells at him for being late. Deborah Whitman is smothering him. As ever, when the pressure gets too much for Peter, he chooses to go out and clear his head as Spider-Man. While swinging through the city, he becomes a target for Boomerang. But let's be honest, Boomerang isn't really any true match for him. After learning that this is an audition, Spider-Man lets loose and takes out all of Boomerang's weapons. Trying to flee, Boomerang is stopped by a bunch of the Kingpin's men who want him dead for humiliating them earlier. Spider-Man intervenes, helps Boomerang stop the thugs, and then wraps up Boomerang for the cops.
All right, very good. So we'll talk kind of overall when we get to, but let's talk about the cover first. What'd you think of the cover?
I think the cover's an absolute blinder. The covers at this time on Spectacular Spider-Man were just sensational. Every single one of them is a pop art extravaganza. Ed Hannigan was doing a lot of them, and they were just amazing. If you go on the aforementioned Mike's Amazing World, pull up Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, and look at them all from around issue 45 to issue 85. They're just brilliant. This is one of the busier ones. It's got a lot going on, but it's still wonderfully eye-catching. And the Ditko-esque Peter Parker, half Peter face, half Spider-Man face. Ah, chef's kiss, man.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I took your advice, and I did just that. I looked at all the covers from Spectacular Spider-Man. This was a series I kind of had, sporadically. I had issues here and there. I guarantee my 9-year-old self saw this on the stands. It was like, whoa, look at all this stuff going on. I gotta have this one. But yeah, and it, so looking through his covers, like Frank Miller did a bunch of the covers, and then obviously Ed Hannigan. There are a couple covers that Hannigan did with Cloak and Dagger that are just amazing. They're just gorgeous. I mean, some of them are like pop art. Or you even said that, sorry. There's the one actually right before this, and I didn't own the issue. It was the only reason I didn't choose it. But there's a cover with Electro, which is fantastic. Oh,
That's
such a
very
good
Will
one.
Eisner, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such a gorgeous cover. And that's very eye-catching. And it actually takes a little bit of a different approach, doesn't it, to the standard, like kind of half Peter, half Spidey, where you can see all of his hair. So
Yeah, and
normally,
his
it's
ears.
kind of cut in half. Yeah. So it's normally just cut in half. So this is almost more like he had his face painted, on one side,
Yeah,
because
this
you
is
can see
almost
it.
like when you see kids have their face painted like Spider-Man at the circus or for Halloween or
Yes.
stuff. This is like he's had that done, but just on half of his face.
Yeah,
It
yeah.
looks really good. It's interesting that you mention Frank Miller and the Frank Miller influence, though. It's Frank Miller at this time that brought the Ditko back to Spider-Man. For the previous decade, John Romita's the standard.
Right.
And John Romita's the one that's appearing on all the merch of the time. When Frank Miller came back and he did a couple of really brilliant annuals, he did two annuals with Denny O'Neil for Amazing Spider-Man, the Ben Sinister, which is a team up with Doctor Strange, and then a clash with the Punisher that are just brilliant. And he brought back that Ditko influence, and Ed Hannigan just ran with it.
Yes, he clearly did. So from there, we'll just get right into the story. So what, you can talk, we don't have to go beat by beat, but we can kind of go through the story. It starts, the beginning of it is sort of interesting. It's kind of this, almost a prelude to the story. It's in the state's witness who's in witness protection program. And obviously is really, is still very concerned because he's got his gun with him. He's soaking his feet and everything. And then Boomerang comes a calling. And so what did you think of the way this issue started.
It's beautiful. That shot at the bottom of page one of Willy the Goat looking through the eye hole in the door and Boomerang saying the title of the story is just beautiful comics. When Boomerang blows up his apartment and the way that what is panel two bleeds into panel three to create like a flipped L shape is gorgeous. I love the cold open to this. I mean, I find it ironic that during his time as EIC, Joey Quesada was constantly chasing Marvel, being TV shows and films, which I never felt worked, but he should have just been making good comics. But here we have a cold open that could literally be an episode of The Equalizer. It's got murder, it's got an explosion, it's got action, it sets up the story wonderfully. And if you're familiar with that old dad show, as you just said to it, yeah. I literally hear, it's time for my boot jets to go wandering, and Boomerang zooms, and I just hear, I just hear that Stuart Copeland opening credit music kick in, because that just sums up New York to me, that thud, and the creepiest opening credits to ever appear on an action television show. And that just bleeds in through this. This is New York in the 80s. It's a little bit grimy. It's a little bit edgy. It's not quite been tidied up into the family-friendly tourist attraction of today. It is a gorgeous cold open.
Yeah, yeah. For those scoring at home, that's the third 80s dad show that Andrew has mentioned. So
I'm sure there'll be more.
There absolutely will be. So yeah, I can't say much more than that. You know, the whole deal, the state, the witness, Boomerang comes and basically blows him up with one of his boomerangs, and then the feds come in, and I have to love the boomerang that cuts the stairwell in half as the feds are trying to run up the stairwell. Yeah, I'm not even sure how that would work exactly, but he slices it in half. As you the one what? Guy goes falling. It's great. It's great.
It is. It's one of those things you don't care about. I mean, because this is another note I add. What I really love about this and this era, Bill Mantlo did a lot of this, as did Roger Stern, who was writing amazing at this time. This propensity to bring back C-list villains, but make them scurry.
Yeah.
Again, like the Joe Q era, Mark Miller, these characters would be jokes. He'd just make fun of them. But you've got this in this short period of time around it. You've got the Cobra and Mr. Hyde. You've got Silvermane. You've got the Ringer. You've got Jack-O-Lantern. Boomerang fits into that C-list era.
Yeah.
But you've not got to lose sight of the fact that if this guy existed in the real world, he'd be scurry as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a lot of these guys, like Electro and other people, their uniforms or their costumes are completely over the top and ridiculous and silly in a lot of ways, but they're also kind of cool, you know. They're like almost, you know, they kind of cross that echelon of like, oh, this is just stupid, and they're kind of cool and in a way kind of functional, you know. I mean, he's basically just has his weapons are kind of make up half his costume, you know, and
they're just strapped to him.
Yeah. But if you just had some dude coming around like throwing razor sharp boomerangs at you, yes, that would be terrifying. That would be terrifying. So
yeah, it's like he made a joke of Electro and Mark Miller in that 12 part Spider-Man story he did. Mm-hmm. If someone could toss lightning bolts out of their fingers, that'd be one scurry dude.
Yeah, think of how worried you are just having your hand wet if you're trying to pull something out of a socket, and then think about a guy who basically just charges lightning out of his body at you. Yeah, absolutely.
I turn the plug sockets off and unplug them when I'm cleaning around the kettle.
Safety first.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we go right into our hero, and you know, he's having a typical Peter Parker day, and you had something to say about this first page that we see Peter, this 9-panel grid that we get.
It's another Ditko-inspired 9-panel grid. Ditko was very fond of the 9-panel grid. And when he broke the 9-panel grid, it was always for a good storytelling reason. Peter just been dumped on here in his tighty-whities. It's just classic Spider-Man. I love it. Every time he puts the phone down, somebody else rings to give him earache.
Until, of course, the last person, he just starts screaming. And you're 100% right. You mentioned that he... Well, I'll let you talk about it. So, like, and the who's on the phone the last time, and what happens there?
The last time it's Aunt May, and I don't know what to read into this, but she looks like she's wearing a nightgown, and Nathan Lebensky looks like he's in his dressing gown. And people have assumed that she's spending the night with him, and that's not somewhere I want to go. But as they've de-aged May and gone along, she's now actually in quite a lot of relationships with men. She even married J. Jonah Jameson's dad at one point.
Well, and she is smoking a cigarette here, so that might lead to it as well. No, she's not smoking a cigarette, but
Well, I
it's
just
a
looked and double checked.
yes,
Panel one of that page is a Ditko swipe.
absolutely.
There are loads of Ditko swipes in this issue. Page 16, panel 1 and 3 are Ditko swipes. Jonah on panel 3 of page 17. Page 18 is evocative of every fight that Ditko did that took place in the Bugle, of which there were more than you would think. Because there was always humor to be mined out of J. Jonah Jameson being cowardly while Spider-Man's fighting to save his life.
The floating, when he's walking into the school, the floating heads of all his worries. There's a lot of Ditko. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I really didn't think about it that much when I was reading this. And then as soon as you said it, I'm seeing it everywhere. And so there's it's kind of funny. It's sort of, we mentioned Frank Miller earlier. Obviously, the Kingpin scenes are very Frank Miller. He really leans into that style of the fight scene where Boomerang. So Boomerang goes and visits the Kingpin, and he's like, "Hey, you probably want to hire me, because I just took out one of these guys that's going to testify against you." Not knowing that, the Kingpin had already worked it out, so this guy was going to give the feds false evidence and lead him off the trail, and now all of a sudden things could stick back to him. But so the Kingpin's goons go to fight him, and that's very Frank Miller. That whole design, the darks and light, the contrast, the type of fighting is completely different than it is later on. It's just really, it's very Frank Miller.
I love that Boomerang's fighting the Blues Brothers here.
That's right. Think about that.
But yeah, that's a very Miller-esque fight sequence from the middle of page 8. Absolutely beautiful. Also beautiful, the bottom of page 9, the shot above Boomerang, looking down on him flying over the
Over the city,
skyscrapers of New York City is, I said shitty then, do
yeah.
apologize for that. Over New York's, I'll say that again so you can edit it, just
No,
for
it's
swearing
fine.
in your
It's
show.
fine. People know what you meant.
That's dizzying.
Yeah,
That's a
it is.
beautiful shot.
That is a great shot. And right before that, he throws a boomerang at Kingpin, and Kingpin just snags it out of the air
Just
and
snatches out a
crushes
bit of.
it.
Oh, absolutely fantastic stuff. I love all of it. And I love Boomerang. Sorry, the Kingpin just literally saying to Boomerang's face, "You're a rank amateur."
The
I love stuff.
spider he knows Spider-Man's gonna wipe the floor with him, but he's
Yeah.
like, "Fine, you never know, maybe he'll get in a lucky shot," or either he gets in a lucky shot, or and rids Kingpin of a problem, or he gets what he deserves for messing up my operation, one way or the
Yeah.
other.
Well, I like that it's Jet Blues who points that out to him. Jet Blues says to the Kingpin, "Look, Kingpin, he's not got a chance against Spider-Man." And the Kingpin's right, "Yeah, I know." He just doesn't care, does he? Like you said, if he gets rid of Spider-Man through a lucky shot, thrill. Excellent, no problem at all. If Boomerang gets killed, well, it's no skin off the Kingpin's nose, is it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So we get into he runs into Marcy Jane, who he was
Marcy
supposed to have as
Kane.
Kane. I'm sorry, I said Jane, sorry. I'm getting her
It's
mixed up with
Aaron,
Mary Jane.
who is not in this comic book.
No, she's not. No, she's not. So this is
There's an
so
entire era here where Mary Jane isn't in it at all.
So he's got other interests here. He's got Marcy Kane, and in this, a couple of pages later, it's Deb. So this actually was going to lead me to a question I had. So do you have, if you had to rank, like, he's had a lot of love interests, throughout
He has.
the years. Do you have, like, what are your like top five or six? Like, who like, you don't have to count them down if you want to, but like, who would you most want him with? Or like, which ones do you like? Which ones do you think, yeah, that would work? Or which ones do you think were a mess?
Well, I didn't think there was any issues with Gwen at all. I think Gwen was his soulmate. She suffers a little bit from Stan's bad scripting of women, but Marvel in the 60s generally suffers from that as well. But there was, I think if they hadn't come in and killed her, I think he would have ended up with Gwen because he had a lot in common with her. She was quite straight-laced as well. She was a science student, which sometimes gets lost in the mess of what happened, but she was also in the science class with him, so there was a meeting of minds there as well. It wasn't just the fact that she was a platinum blonde beauty who looked stunning in go-go boots. She had a brain there as well. So for me, it's always Gwen. And the thing to remember with that is this isn't some nostalgia from childhood. Gwen was dead before I started reading these books, so that's something I came to later on. I think the Mary Jane that he ended up with ended up being a pretty good partner for him. But I do think that the marriage was on shaky ground when it was an editorial fiat because Stan was marrying him in the newspaper strip. And certainly the Mary Jane of the Jerry Conway run grows into being a partner for Peter. But I always read that as they were two people who lost somebody at a very young age and they needed each other and learned from each other and grew with each other over that time. But then when Mary Jane left, I kind of think Peter closed the door on that relationship. And then they brought her back. And the intention was to bring her back as being a friend and a confidant. They didn't really have any intention to, I suppose you could count that as a Golden Girls reference. There you go. They didn't really have any intention to marry them off. But they are the top two. Of these other lesser girlfriends, I have a real soft spot for the Black Cat.
Oh, okay. Felicia Hardy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's this platinum blonde thing again. I do have a friend who once pointed out to me when I was a much younger man that your problems are always with little blondes. Don't know what he meant. I did end up marrying one.
Well, it couldn't have been that much of a problem then.
No. Can't be that much of a problem. I do have a soft spot for Black Cat. I do love what they've done with her in the recent comics, where she rides that line between being a good guy and a bad guy really well. The new series by G. Willow Wilson is brilliant. Can't recommend that enough. Of his other ones always seem to be also rans, don't they? Deb Whitman didn't really evolve into much. Cissy Ironwood is barely mentioned nowadays. Eamon Betty Brant was very much one of those older woman, younger man thing where I think he just got more interested in the fact that he was dating more than anything else. I don't think they were ever really compatible. Of the new lot, I didn't mind Carly Cooper. I'm going to be honest with you.
Oh yeah, I forgot all about her. I forgot all about Deb until I reread this too,
Well,
a lot of these
the
people.
most interesting thing they did with Deborah Whitman, did you read Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man?
I did not know.
Peter David did this very interesting story where at the time of Civil War, where they have Peter reveal his secret identity, he brings Deborah Whitman back and she writes a tell-all novel of how he tricks her into thinking she's insane for thinking that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And it's actually a genuinely good story because if you read the next couple of issues of this, Peter totally gaslights this poor woman
Yeah,
because she
she's
finds out
clearly
he's
a mess,
Spider-Man.
and yeah, and he's not really taking that into consideration at all, her feelings or
No.
anything.
Yeah, it's absolutely madness. And then the Ben Reilly of it all, he ended up with a redhead as well, whose name temporarily escapes me, but she was quite an interesting character. But Ben Reilly also had this on again, off again, very brief relationship because Dan Jurgens didn't stay on the book long enough to do anything with it, with the daughter of the burglar that killed Uncle Ben,
Oh,
Jessica
jeez.
Carradine. And I that could have been an interesting yin and yang, will they, won't they kind of thing. That he's falling for the daughter of the person who killed his uncle. That could have been a really interesting dynamic that never went anywhere. And then when Dan Jurgens left the strip, she was never seen again.
Oh, interesting. No, I didn't know about that. Yeah.
That's so she had potential, that character, and then they never really did anything else with her. And then over in Ultimate Spider-Man, teaming him up with Kitty Pryde was interesting.
Yes, that's true. I forgot. I read that entire series, and yeah, that they did have a good relationship there. It was kind of like a friendship and, young love. But yeah, that worked kind of well because they were both sort of young kids that were both dealing with a lot of responsibility that shouldn't be thrown on people their age. So yeah, that was good until they just decided to drown everybody in the flood and ruin the whole universe. But whatever,
Yeah, but
that's an
for that
aside.
short time, that was an interesting relationship.
Yeah,
And
I agree.
that was showed one of the reasons of him not being with the one from the very beginning. You get to have Peter play the field if he doesn't have a Lois Lane.
And he has to play the field. This cannot be as something where he dies. Although, like you said, I'm in the same boat as you. I think Gwen was the one for him. Do you ever wish they would have, I mean, it's comic books, so obviously they could do it. Do you ever wish they would have brought her back some way? I mean, I know there is a Gwen Stacy now, as a ghost, but I mean, that Gwen Stacy, do you ever wish they had brought her back some way, maybe after A Brand New Day or something like that? One of those deals where they, she'd be back. Do you ever wish that, or are you like, well, they killed her, that's the way it goes, or
No, because as much as I disagree with that decision in hindsight, and again, I wasn't even born when they killed her off, so it's weird that she should be the one that I think is the one. Once you've committed to that, one of the things that made Spider-Man feel real was that his life did move forward and changed and developed. Even in the Conway Lenween Roger Stern era, he's becoming a teaching assistant. He's moved his way through college. He's got his degree. He's going on for his doctorate and all of that stuff. So, as much as I think it was a mistake to kill her, I did like the relationship that developed between him and Mary Jane after she was dead. So I've never really wanted them to bring her back, like in an in-continuity thing. Now, if they'd gone ahead with their original, the idea that Jay Straczynski pitched, which was following the Brand New Day thing, Mephisto just sends everything backwards in time, and it's back at issue 50 again, which I think was where Straczynski wanted to put it all. That has potential, but once Straczynski leaves, I don't think you can trust modern day creators to just carry on in that direction. There would be far too much of a temptation for them to be cute with it and have stories where Gwen's dangled off a bridge and maybe not killed. And I'm kind of done with that. I think it was done to death in the films, and it's starting to just feel a little, it's as boring now as bringing Gwen back, and she's always got that goddamn headband on.
I can see that. I can see that. I was going to say, so you were talking about you kind of love this type of Spider-Man as well, the kind of Spider-Man we see in this issue, his sort of the annoying Spider-Man.
Yeah, I love this era. As much as I've said issue 99 could be the end and should be the end, and maybe you don't have to read any more, that's not to say I don't think there was some brilliant stuff with him done in the future after that. I genuinely think that Amazing Spider-Man has a pretty high threshold of quality through what, issue 3, 350-ish? I think for the most part, that strip really does have a high bar. There are peaks and troughs, as there are with any long run. This era, where he was just a young man struggling to balance his job with his learning with being Spider-Man, is a different take on it. But what I genuinely love about this is every single one of the writers of this time got it right in terms of the Spider-Man of it all. Spider-Man's an annoying asshole. I love Spider-Man when he's an annoying asshole. He's just at his best when he's Bugs Bunny or he's David Addison from Moonlighting or Ash from The Evil Dead. He's just that irritant who you nevertheless like because he's charming and funny. But you can fully understand that if you're Dr. Octopus, you hate this
No,
guy's guts
sure.
because he just does not take you seriously on any level. And that is really irritating for somebody who takes themselves as seriously as Dr. Octopus does.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And then this smart ass keeps wiping the floor with you too in the end. That's the thing. It's not even that he acts that way, it's that he always wins too in the end. So
And what I love about this one is he kind of has the kid gloves on for Boomerang at the
he
beginning
does, yes. He's
because he
sort of
knows he
toying
can.
with him, yeah.
He's playing with him like a cat plays with a mouse because he knows he can take this guy. it's not really that big of a threat to him. He's, you know, he's taken out much heavier hitters than this guy.
Yeah.
But once he finds out that this is just an audition to work for the Kingpin, he just loses his shit, doesn't he?
Right. Yes, he does. Then he's pretty pissed. And sorry, before we go any further, I do have to go back, and you mentioned it as well, that page 13 is gorgeous.
Oh, gorgeous page.
Yes, it's a gorgeous page. It's you have sort of the contrasting views. You have the top part of the page is Boomerang from behind, who's behind the giant Daily Bugle sign, and he's watching Spider-Man swing by with the cityscape in the background. And then it's flipped around for the bottom half. But there's no like page, there's no like panel break. It just sort of morphs into the other scene where you have Spider-Man in the foreground and then you have Boomerang in the background, and the Daily Bugle sign kind of acts as you know, sort of this typography that goes into the artwork. So like you see in a Will Eisner or a Storenko image or something like that, which is really interesting as well.
Like if this was a camera, the camera is moving around the Daily Bugle sign.
Absolutely, yes.
Whilst you're following what the characters are doing, but the focal point of the shot is that Daily Bugle sign, and that's showing you, that's telling you story-wise that you're moving around the back of the building. It is, it's just a beautiful page.
It really is gorgeous. And then, as you mentioned before, this fight scene is very Ditko, and I didn't realize it at first, but some of these pages, I mean, like you're J. Jonah Jameson on 17 that you pointed out with his hands out and stuff like that, and them fighting through there. Yes, very Ditko. And it's a good fight scene. Like you said, it's not, this could have been sort of really blasé and boring, because you're right. Boomerang isn't a major threat. You know, he's not fighting the Juggernaut. He's not fighting the Green Goblin or Dr. Octopus or something like that. But there's enough going on here, and there's enough visual with the boomerangs flying and him Spider-Man swinging around and using parts of the city, you know, the rooftops and stuff like that, that it's a lot of fun. They do a good job with it.
Hmm. And it's recognizing as well that if you want to put Spider-Man on the back foot, put him in a confined space.
Yes.
Take away his ability to bound around and leap from building to building and swing around and come around the back at you. Put him in a confined space and you've almost got a chance of beating him.
But out here, no chance. But like you said, when inside the Bugle, he's in a little bit of trouble. Because you not only have that, but you also have the fact that he has to worry about people around him as well. And Boomerang doesn't care about that, you know.
No, and Spider-Man's smart enough to realize that, because he throws Boomerang out of a window.
Yes, yes. And then he throws his rival's camera out the window.
Oh, he hated Lance Bannon. I loved that relationship. Because for a long time, there didn't seem to be any rivals for Peter at the Bugle. You did wonder where they got the photos before Peter showed up. Mm-hmm. But in this period, they have a permanent photographer of the name of Lance Bannon, who is just a constant thorn in Peter's side for getting decent pictures of Spider-Man, because he's a trained photographer. And one of the things that Peter realizes is he's never actually had any photography training. He uses the fact that he got lucky taking selfies, which essentially is what he was doing. So the Lance Bannon stuff was always good for a few chuckles.
Yeah, I agree. I feel bad for at one point they're on a rooftop and somebody's garden's just getting torn up too. I mean, all that fencing they put in and everything and the potted plants, they're all gone now, unfortunately. But so they're duking it out for a few pages, and then Kingpin's thugs track him down. And you're right, Spider-Man does get a little cocky, and he takes all his boomerangs around, but he kind of forgets about his jet boots, and he gets a face full of jet boot, and Boomerang thinks he's going to get away. And then you have the Kingpin's thugs show up, and they're, and I like how petty this is. They're just pissed because he beat him up. It's basically why they came after him. They're like, we don't want to get, you know, we're tired of being John. And you got to think about that. I mean, all these guys, I mean, how many of these guys who are like bodyguards or the hired thugs of all these villains get their ass kicked like every week by some random hero or by a Daredevil or Spider-Man or Iron Fist or Luke Cage or Elektra or whoever, and they gotta be like, man, I'm tired of
Yes.
this. I want to shoot one of these guys.
Yeah, you does and that's what makes Spider-Man at its best work. These guys, they are being petty and insecure, and you get that. You understand they must be, like you said, they must be pissed off with the bullseyes of the world.
Sure. Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 'Cause they'll humiliate these guys. In some cases, I'm sure they kill them, stuff like that. And they're always like, well, and we just gotta pick ourselves up and take it.
Yeah, it's, I can fully understand them being annoyed.
Exactly. Good for you, thugs. I mean, it didn't work out for him, but good for the
Good for you
college
standing
effort.
up for yourself
Exactly.
in
Exactly.
the criminal organization that you have chose to work for.
And then of course, so there he's in trouble with them. Spider-Man, which was sort of an odd choice, tosses down his boomerangs so he can take out the thugs and then stops Boomerang. Why didn't he just take him out himself instead of giving him Boomerang? Because Boomerang could have killed these guys, instead of just
I thought
disarming
exactly
them.
the same thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but he didn't. He just knocked the guns out of their hands, and then Spider-Man webs up Boomerang, and that's all she
Yeah.
wrote as Kingpin watches him swing by. But
Yeah,
all
because
of,
there is
yeah, go ahead.
nothing stopping Boomerang from slitting the throats here
No,
with one
absolutely
of his
not.
razor rangs. It's
Yeah.
just dumb luck he chooses to break the wrists instead.
Yep.
Spider-Man could have really screwed up here.
Yeah, this could have been bad. This could have been a lot of angst for him. But yeah, and then you see Kingpin watching him swing by at the end. And all in all, it's a good issue, right? This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a great issue from a rare time when Spectacular Spider-Man was just as good as amazing, which wasn't as common as you would think, to be honest with you. There was this era, Roger Stern, and then some Peter David stuff, and then the time that it was bi-weekly when Jerry Conway was writing both this and Web of Spider-Man, so he essentially made them a bi-weekly comic, and then JM DeMatteis's run with Sal Buscema. I mean, there were plenty of times it was as bad as The Amazing Spider-Man, but there was only rare times that it was as good as The Amazing Spider-Man. And this Bill Mantlo run with Ed Hannigan doing the covers and some of the interior art, and then the whole Black Cat storyline with the gang war between Dr. Octopus and the Owl, this was just
Oh,
primo.
yes, that's right. I forgot about that. That was a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, this was just I mean, and if you look at the bullpen bulletins, Marvel was pretty consistent across the board here. And this was probably the last time I could afford to buy loads of the comics.
Yeah,
And
that's true.
there's an element of, I listened to a podcast once that had this section called Was It Great or Was I Eight?
Yeah.
And you could go back and read old stuff, and sometimes you can go, okay, well, it was good when I was eight. But I genuinely adored rereading this. I had an absolute ball with it.
Yeah, no, this was fun. And obviously when you pick Spider-Man, I was thinking about some different stories and some of you had just, there was one that I was really interested in covering, but you had literally just covered it or just were covering it in your Spider-Man podcast. And that was the two-part Savage Land storyline. And I think just because that was a very early impression of me of Spider-Man that I read like through was it Marvel Tales that would reprint them?
Yeah,
Was
yeah,
that
yeah.
the one? And of course, a lot of that probably had to do with Gwen Stacy in a bikini the whole time. But there was that, and I was thinking, well, what haven't I was trying to think of Spider-Man stories that I really enjoyed, and I was like, well, Spectacular Spider-Man was always kind of fun, and like I said, I had random issues of it, and I was kind of thumbing through. I was like, oh, this one was really cool, the one with Boomerang. So anyway. So I'm glad you were down for covering this one, because I think it was a lot of fun. It was a good reread, and it really holds up.
Yeah, genuinely good, done in one comic. Absolutely brilliant.
Anything else you want to say about this particular issue?
Not only that, if you do look at the bullpen bulletins checklist, the amount of these comics I was reading, like, modern day me weeps for
Yeah,
the fact that I could afford this many comics, because they were only 25 pence at this point. I've told this story before, but you may not have heard it, and your listeners may not be familiar with me. I used to get 60 pence for my dinner. I would buy a sausage roll for 19p. I would buy a can of Coke for 21p, and I would pocket 20 pence a day. And every Tuesday for PE, phys ed, we would go to the swimming baths in my local town and we would swim. That would be our PE. And I would take that pound and I would go and buy four comics from the little newsagents in town that stocked American comic books. And so, I did that for years, and I was just, when they went up to 30p, I was like horrified because I couldn't afford four anymore.
What were the ones like around this time? What were you reading besides
Spider-Man? Well, the core was always Amazing Spider-Man and Spectacular Spider-Man.
Right.
I would buy Marvel Team Up on occasion.
Okay.
But on this list, I would have bought Marvel 2-in-1 if I had the money. I would have bought Daredevil if I had the money. Captain America, because it was the Mike Zett era, which was brilliant.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I would pick up Incredible Hulk on occasion, Marvel Tales, which at this point was reprinting the original Lee Ditko issues.
Okay.
I was probably just about to pick up X-Men or starting to pick up X-Men around the Paul Smith run. I definitely was buying John Byrne's Fantastic Four,
oh, sure,
which was one of my favorite comics at the time. I wouldn't have been buying Star Wars because Star Wars wasn't allowed over here because Star Wars Weekly was being published. So Marvel wouldn't allow books that were being published over there. So it's amazing to me that Spider-Man got over, because Spider-Man Comics Weekly was still an ongoing concern.
Now, what was Star Wars Weekly? What was that?
Star Wars Weekly was our version. All our comics were weekly and they were anthologies. So Star Wars would publish like 6 pages of your monthly Star Wars.
Okay.
And then it would publish like 6 to 10 pages of ROM as a backup strip,
six to ten pages of the
Micronauts as a backup strip, and it would split those strips up so it could serialize them weekly. Now, with Spider-Man, that wasn't so much of an issue because Spider-Man had 3 comics on the go. We had Amazing, Spectacular, and Marvel Team-Up.
Right.
So they would publish all 3 of those, split up, so you were getting like 10 pages, 11 pages on a weekly basis, and then a backup strip. And they would cycle through Amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker. But with Star Wars, obviously, you only had Star Wars. So making that weekly ultimately sometimes meant we got 5 pages of Star Wars. Or, on rare occasions, they would do strips specifically for Star Wars Weekly that didn't see print in America until many, many years later. Sometimes American Star Wars comics were being printed in Britain first. To meet that demand. It was madness. I don't know how they kept up with it.
Wow. Interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah, my only real experience with British comics was my dad went there on sabbatical. He was a teacher. He went there on sabbatical. He went over to England and played a bunch of golf courses and stuff like that. And this was when I was maybe in elementary school, middle school or something like that. And he brought me back some comics, and they were all like, they were like sort of like newsprint, but like they didn't have like a glossy cover, and it was called it was called like the Blue Eyed Thing or the Ever Loving Blue Eyed Thing, something like that. It was about the thing, and it was reprinting Marvel 2-in-1, the same way you're talking about, just like part of it. And that particular series, it was a team up with Machine Man, because he got me like 3 or 4 of them, and they had each of them had like some sort of like pull out thing, like one was like a spiral hat.
That was issue one.
And do that, and it had different things in it like that. I think one had like some sort of like, you know, flyer thing, almost like a paper airplane type thing or something like that. It was all that stuff. But the thing was, it was like every other page was color, and then the other pages were like not black and white, but like almost a blue and white.
Does
that make sense to you?
I had loads of comics like that. They'd have 2 color comics, and we'd often only have color in the middle pages, or so there'd be a poster or something like that. You're on about cut costs by not having a glossy cover, which meant it could have more color in the comic itself.
And so I think it was reprinting that, and I think it was reprinting like some Captain America stuff.
Yeah, I think they put some DeMatteis's cap in that as well.
It was definitely Zek art. I remember, I still have them. I don't have them out right now, but I still have them somewhere. It was interesting, you know. I was like, wow, this is really different. So basically they would print it weekly, so more or less 4 weeks would equal 1 comic.
Yeah,
more
more
or
or
less.
less.
Okay.
And we change the spellings to match British spellings, and
Yeah.
sometimes update like pop culture references and stuff like that. It was all
Yeah.
it's interesting to do comparisons. I did a Facebook post once comparing the initial publication of the Sinister Six in Spider-Man Comics Weekly, like 1973, to the original Spider-Man Annual Number One, because a lot of those characters hadn't appeared over here yet, so they redrew the art so that like Giant Man and the Wasp were Mr. Fantastic and Sue.
Oh, really? Okay.
So as not to confuse the readership. It was
Oh, interesting.
just it's insanity.
Wow. Well, yeah, that's really cool. So, well, listen, it's last call. It's last call, Andrew. So, in this segment, I asked my insightful guest, Andrew, some thought-provoking questions that came to me as I prepare for the show. I asked the questions. Andrew fascinates us all with his answers. So, are you ready?
I am ready, yes. One
Okay.
last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey and beer.
Yeah, exactly. As always, I've provided Andrew with the first two questions, and then the last one is a mystery fantastic question. So, fantastic question number one, you are suddenly an American, Andrew, whether you want to or not. And so I isn't quite, yeah, it's kind of a it's an up and down thing right now. I'm not gonna lie to you. Where do you want to live? What would you do for a living? What kind of car would you drive? What activities would you enjoy? And would you own a gun and how many? So those are
Well,
basically my questions.
no, the last one is yes. I would totally own a gun. Because there is a certain level of fascination. See, we don't get your fascination with the gun. We don't understand your adoration of it. But at the same time, that cowboy image looms large, doesn't it? The
Yes, it
six
does.
guns strapped to your thigh and just the coolness of Clint Eastwood in the Outlaw Josey Wales and that kind of thing.
Sure.
So yeah, I'd definitely own a gun. I'm sorry, I apologize to every one of my countrymen that I'm selling you out, but I would totally go to a shooting range and I would totally enjoy using it. Whilst also thinking that maybe we'd be better if we didn't have them, but you know, it is
Yes.
what it
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, no, I get it. I get it. So
is.
go ahead.
The live thing is interesting. As a long-time Marvel zombie, New York has like a certain appeal, and I still want to go. I've still never ticked that off my bucket list, but I will. But I generally only like big cities for a short time. I'm not a city person. People annoy me. So that's probably out. I'd be more inclined probably to, like we just said, I'd probably live somewhere with wide open spaces so I could pretend to be a cowboy. I'd be shit at it, but I'd give it a go.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, you don't know until you try, do you?
So like someplace like Oklahoma
Yeah,
or
Montana.
Wyoming. Maybe why well you see like Texas and Oklahoma is it's so ungodly hot down there. It's just oppressively hot. So maybe someplace a little further north like Wyoming or the Dakotas or something like that might be a little more to your liking.
Somebody who's used to Manchester winters,
Yes.
you're saying
Yes.
that that would be more. I will
Yeah.
bow to your knowledge, sir. I
All right,
will. All
very
right,
good.
I'll have that. I'll
Very
go
good.
with
And there's
Wyoming.
plenty of white. There's like seven people who live in Wyoming. So you have plenty of
Oh, that
space.
sounds
Don't
like
worry about it.
bliss. Oh, so you don't bump into people for days.
No, you
Oh.
don't. There's more people who live in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., than there are that live in Wyoming. So then
I
Wyoming is probably like 10 times larger. So more than that, actually.
Oh, I could live with that.
There you go.
Failing that,
All right.
Hawaii, just
Oh.
so I could answer your next question and fulfill my lifelong ambition to be Hawaiian-based private investigator. So basically, if I can't be Hannibal Hayes, I'll be
Right.
Thomas Magnum.
There you go. There you go. If
And
somebody's
if you
going to
get the
put you
Hannibal
up,
Hayes reference, I will be dead impressed.
I have no
I will be
idea who
dead
Hannibal
impressed if
Hayes
anyone
is.
gets
I apologize. I have no idea who that is.
Alias Smith and Jones. Was a corking western from my youth. Again, it's before I was born, it was made, but it got repeated like a loads on BBC One.
Okay.
And I loved that show. I loved Alias Smith and Jones. So if you're adding to the count, I've mentioned Moonlighting, I've mentioned Alias Smith and Jones, and now I've mentioned Magnum PI.
Very good.
The car is a brilliant question. As a lifelong supporter of the Green Party, which is who I vote for whenever an election comes up, unless I have to do some tactical voting. It absolutely does not please me to acknowledge that I am a massive muscle car fan. I love them. I love how they sound. I love how they look. I love everything about them. I go to the Warrington American Stars and Stripes car show, which happens every year around July 4th, about 10 miles away from it. I go to that every year so we can watch the cowboy shows and we can shoot some fake guns and I can sit in muscle cars. I go every year.
Nice.
I am self enough aware to know that they are massively destructive to the environment.
Yes.
But if I could have an electric car that looked exactly like a Chevy Chevelle, I would. My favorite, I loved the Pontiac Firebird that Jim Rockford used to drive. Tick another box.
Yep, yep.
Starsky's 1975 Torino. Tick another box.
Yeah.
I'm aware that it's a brick to drive, but it looked cool when I was six. The Dodge Challenger from Vanishing Point is a beautiful car, especially when he jumps it over that road. The Camaro, all of them are awesome. Yeah. But if you're going to pin me down and say I'm only allowed one, it's the 1973 Dodge Charger from Burn Notice.
Which, that's a gorgeous car.
Yep, sleek, black, white leather interior. It's stunning and it's angry looking and I adore it. And I know that it was a bitch for the actors to drive that in Miami with no aircon.
Yeah,
but if I'm in Wyoming, I'm all right then, aren't I?
Oh, you're perfectly fine in Wyoming. Don't worry about that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm having it. I'm having Michael Weston's Dodge Charger.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. Yeah, I'm a big fan of muscle cars too, and you're right. They are horrific for the environment, probably. Well, not, I don't know. They're not as bad as other vehicles. Actually, if you were living in Wyoming, you'd see a lot more vehicles that were a lot larger than the Charger, who are a lot worse for the environment than the Charger is. So don't worry about that. Yeah. So actually, one time. So my father used to live down in Myrtle Beach, which is in South Carolina, which is about for a drive from where I live, it's about 7-8 hours. And I took when my kids were little, I took them down there 1 year, and it was just the three of us that year. This was before my youngest was born. I was supposed to we rented a car because I didn't want to put all the miles on my car. So we went to the rental place and I was supposed to get like this little minivan or something like that. Cause both my kids were in car seats at this time. My two older kids were both in car seats. And so we went to go pick it up and they didn't, you know, like it happens with a lot of rental car places. They were like, well, we're out of it. They're like, so you can pick something else. So I picked a Dodge Charger instead. So I somehow got like both the kids' car seats in the back of the Charger. And it was bliss. It was so much fun to drive this thing, even though it was a newer version, obviously. It wasn't a 73. But it was just so much fun to drive that thing, you know, down the highway for like 8 hours. And my kids were miserably cramped in the back, but it was worth it to me.
But you didn't care because you were driving a Dodge Charger.
Exactly. It was like quiet back there.
Every time we come to Florida, and I do want to come again sometime soon because I really want to go to the new Universal Land with the horror stuff.
Okay.
Because I'm a big fan of like Frankenstein and Dracula and the Mummy and the Invisible Man and all that stuff.
Gotcha.
And every time we rent a car over there, I want them to have a Dodge Charger. And they never do. They've had a Challenger.
Oh, did you rent it?
And they, no, because we had the kids with us, so I had to be practical. And they have had a Ford Mustang, and next time we go, I'm tempted to get either the Mustang or the Challenger.
Yes, you should. You should. Because your kids won't be with you now, right?
Oh, they will, but they're in their 20s now. So
they can get their own car.
Yeah, they're going to get their own fly drive.
Yeah, exactly.
And Anya, my daughter, is already like, I'm having a Mustang.
Yeah.
He is already, I am having a Mustang, Dad. I don't care what you're doing. I am having a Mustang. Okay. You can do what you want, love. You're 23. Do what you want.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, good. So I brought that question up because I remember from some of your shows you mentioning your love of muscle cars. So I was like, all right, well, let's put him in our land for a while and see what he'd be interested in. So that
it was very much appreciated. I loved that question, actually.
Yeah,
that was a great question.
So earlier I mentioned when we came back, I mentioned chess or Stratego, as I call it. If you had a Spider-Man centric chess set, like, you know, Dr. Doom always had the chess sets with all the characters, you know, because he must have had a really good chess guy. What Spidey characters would fill out your chess set? So, you know,
Well,
you can.
Dr.
What?
Doom's got some poor guy in his basement just carving the pieces out, hasn't he?
Yeah, like every other week he's got to be like, you know, Captain Marvel changed her costume. I need a new one. You know, come on, stuff like that.
Yeah. The wasp has changed her suit yet
It's like,
again.
oh,
You
the
make
wasp.
me another wasp figure. And hit the guy's, oh, God's sake.
Yeah, the dude's probably like, oh God, can't she die soon or something?
He's probably more like, well, she'll die soon, but she'll just get better.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then she'll be back and have another costume. But yeah, that's true. That's true. And then the giant guys, I gotta make those bigger, you know, and stuff like that. And the thing's gotta be a bitch to the carve too.
What Dr. Doom's like, he will want them to be actual size. Because how else does he do those covers where he's looming large over things if he's not
That's
got a
true.
chest suit that's actual size?
That's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah. It would be tough to be Dr. Doom's chess guy. It really
It's tough.
would.
He's like a James Bond villain, isn't he? You know you've not got a long lifespan.
No. If you're going, well, you know what? If you're going to work for him, that's, you know, that's your problem. You
Yeah,
know, you should
it's
have
the Death
thought.
Star thing, isn't it? You know what you're going into.
Exactly. You know, you said yes to this, so don't get upset when it blows up. You know,
Yeah.
I don't
Yeah,
know what to
you're
tell you.
taking the guy's money.
Yep, hope it was worth it. So anyway, as I was saying, if you had the Spider-Man ch centric chess set, what Spidey characters would fill out your chess set, go ahead.
First off, I'm really sorry, but when you podcast with me, you know there's going to be tangents. I'm sorry.
No,
You
absolutely.
like working for Dr. Doom, you know what you're getting into, dude. Okay, well, the white side
I'm
won.
pouring some more scotch, by the way, everybody
Oh,
at home.
girl, I went and got the bottle. So, the white Peter is the king, Mary Jane's the queen, obviously.
Gotcha.
Knights are Spider-Man and Daredevil, and we just won't question how Spider-Man can be in two places at the same time.
Right.
Bishops were having Black Cat and Silver Sable, two ladies you don't want to cross. And I've just noticed as well, two more Platinum Blondes.
Yeah.
My
Yeah,
friend was
that's true.
right.
Is Silver Sable is she a good guy? Or she kind of
She
straddles the line
kind of
too.
straddles that line. She's a
Okay.
mercenary for hire, so she goes where the money is, but sometimes her conscience gets the better of them. You know the deal.
Yep.
For the Rooks, I'm having J. Jonah Jameson and Robbie Robertson, solid, dependable characters for
Very
solid,
good.
dependable pieces.
Absolutely.
And for the Pawns, I'm having the Spider-Tracers because they were adapted considerably for the superior Spider-Man run. So they could do all kinds of little sneaky things for you while they're, being thrown to the wolves.
Very good. Very good.
For the black side, King and Queen would be Kingpin and the White Rabbit because I absolutely love the White Rabbit, precursor to Harley Quinn.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The Knights are Dr. Octopus and the Green Goblin. They'd sulk at not being king, but whatever.
Yeah.
For the Bishops, Venom and Carnage. And I know some people would say, why is Black Cat on the good side and Venom isn't? And the answer is, this is my list. I can do what I want. And for the Rooks, another solid, dependable foe like the Rocket Racer, Big Wheel, someone a bit crap, but they get the job done. I mean, you could swap them for Boomerang and Cobra and Mr. Hyde,
The
or.
big wheel. See
Yeah.
now, yeah, like right now, people like the Lizard and Sandman are like, what the hell? I had the big wheel and Rocket Racer get on this thing, and I'm sitting at home. But I'll
I
digress.
refer you to my earlier answer. It's my list and I can do what
Ahead.
want. And for the Pawns, the Spider Slayers, because there's been loads of them at this point, haven't there? Yeah, so we'll have the Spider Slayers.
Very good. That's a good chess set. I like that.
Freshly carved by the slaves of Dr. Doom.
Yeah, I hope they're to scale and accurate. Otherwise, there's going to be hell to pay.
Well, if they're
Although,
going to do Black Cat to scale, she'll set your eyes out.
yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, here's the thing, though. Like, even if they're not to scale, even if he messes up a little bit, is he really going to kill the chess guy? Because then he's got to find another. I mean, how many good chess guys are out there? You know, you gotta
That's true.
figure
It
that's
must
like
be a.
finding a good
It's.
cobbler at this point. I mean, how many are
Yeah,
out there? So,
it's not like he can just put an advertisement in Doom Weekly and ask for a new chess cutter, is it? The
exactly. So,
Daily Doom or whatever the newspaper of Latveria is called.
yeah, I
The
was gonna say.
Latveria Lies. Oh no, that would be too on the nose, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And talking about a small town, Latveria's got like 50 people in it. So, I mean, if he kills his chess guy, then he's really hurting.
He's got 50 people in it, and Doom insists on the dress code of a 1930s Frankenstein movie.
Yeah, I think he's got to be a little lenient with the chess guy.
Yeah.
I would say he's got to know, I know he likes to come off all tough and everything and merciless, but sometimes he's got to, I'm sure he has a soft side for some people. And he's like, this guy's been with me at the beginning. He's been with me since, what was that, Fantastic Four issue 4 or 5? I should know
Yeah.
this. This was like the first issue I covered in the Fantastic Four. But when I had the when he had the chess set with the Fantastic Four, and they had just gotten their costumes too. So I mean, this guy works fast. You gotta give him some leniency. Plus,
Yeah, cut him some slack, man.
yeah.
I mean,
Plus, he
how many
does
wasp stingers at this point do you think he has?
exactly. He's got like a closet full of wasp figures on its own.
Yeah.
It's got like its own section.
He's got a couple of daredevils. You know,
Yeah, I was
people.
gonna say, he's like, what the hell? Even Daredevil's changing his costume now. What's all this nonsense?
I just imagine he's looking at the yellow and black one going, did a blind guy design this?
So, all right. So the mystery fantastic question, I'll be honest, this changed like 5 times. At first it was gonna be like I wanted you to like rank Peter's girlfriends, but I was like, we'll kind of talk about that. That would be more organic, like when we're discussing things. And then I thought, and you can answer this one too, but I was thinking about when we were talking about how you thought it should end at 99. I was going to kind of ask you if Stan Lee tapped you to do issues 100 through 199, like you had to do another 100 issues of Spider-Man. Basically, what direction would you lead him in? And you can answer that if you want.
I'd have him accept Norman Osborn's job because I think that would be absolutely fantastic drama for Spider-Man, that he's now working for his greatest enemy, but his greatest enemy doesn't remember that he's Spider-Man, and he's trying to, he's took this job so he's got a steady income, so because he knows he's going to ask Gwen to marry him, but he's got this constant fear and anxiety at all times that Norman's going to snap and remember that he's Spider-Man. I'd do
Interesting.
that. I'd have him because they teased that a number of times. They dangled that carrot a couple of times that
Yeah.
Norman Osborn recognized that Peter was pretty smart and wanted him to come and work for Oscorp, and Peter always turned him down. Now I'm like, well, what would happen if he didn't turn him down?
Oh,
Go and
interesting.
work for him. That's what I'd do with it. And
All
I
right.
certainly wouldn't be killing Gwen.
No, I was going to say Gwen would still be around, I assume. Yes.
Yeah, I'd have Mary Jane still kind of semi-dating Harry and just driving him further and further into alcoholism and drug addiction because she just didn't care about him at
No,
all.
she didn't.
I'd have the only thing I think I'd stay the same, Flash would come back and he wouldn't be as much of an asshole anymore. Because I did
Yeah.
like that character development for Flash.
Yeah, no, I think that was a good character development for him too. Just kind of getting out of the bully role and growing up a little bit. And I think, assuming what experiences he had, I guess it could take him in two directions, but I think the growing up part would probably be a better way to go about that, or a more interesting way. So, and I
He can
think the
go working
reason
for Silver Surtle.
that's true. That's true.
He's a
Yeah. He could be
trained.
he's a trained killer. He could be a mercenary now.
Yeah, I'd have him go for work for because there you've got some brilliant drama.
Yeah, that's true.
Peter does not like how Silver Sable does business. The guy that he's grown to quite like since he's got back from the army, because he's not the bully asshole that he once was, now works for Sable. Come on,
Interesting.
guys, this stuff writes itself.
It really does. That's really good. I like that. I like that idea. And I think the reason Mary Jane never took Harry seriously is the hair. It's got to be the hair.
And he's a whiner. Let's
Yeah.
be honest.
Yeah, it sucks. Anyway, all right, so that was not my question. That was an aside. My
Oh, okay.
question, my mystery fantastic question was, and I basically changed it as we were talking, okay?
So you
Based
couldn't
on
even
your
settle on it beforehand.
I was supposed to.
I love this podcasting on the hoof, man. It's my
Yes.
favorite thing ever.
So my your interest in 80s dads, 80s 80 70s and 80s dad shows. If you had to put together a team, sort of an A-team-esque team of people from from your 80s and 70s and 80s dad shows, and you don't have to limit it to four, but that, you know, this would be a team that would obviously fight for good, but would be a little kind of walk the edge a little bit, kind of like Silver Sable, except not necessarily for hire, maybe just for the good, what have you, along the lines of the Equalizer and stuff like that. What would your team be?
This is an exceptionally good question. Okay, right. The ringleader of it all, the guy sending them out on their missions and all that stuff, is Control, played by Robert Lansing in The Equalizer.
Gotcha.
Because I always quite liked him. I thought there was a lot more going on there than he let slip. He's like a duck. He was very calm on the surface, but underneath those legs were flapping away. So the guy who's sending them on the missions is Control from The Equalizer. So you always need like different members that can bring different things to it. So first of all, I'm bringing on Templeton Peck, Faceman.
Baseman,
Faceman could get anything from anywhere at any time. And you need somebody when you're in trouble. I need a tank now. And like, dude, we're in the middle of Egypt. Where am I going to get a tank? You're Templeton Peck, sort it out, and he will come back with a tank for you. So I'm having Faceman on my team. You need somebody who's a good shot, somebody who's good with a weapon. So I'm having Kid Curry from Alias Smith and Jones, fastest gun in the West. I'm having him. He was pretty cool. So we've got Control giving the orders. We've got Faceman getting you the stuff. We've got Kid Curry for the weapons. We need a leader. We need a good leader, somebody who'll come along and give the orders, and people will follow the orders because this guy is so charismatic that you can't help but follow him. Jim Rockford. And the beauty of that is Jim Rockford would not want the job. And that's why he'd be perfect for the job.
He'd be the reluctant leader of this team,
Yeah,
yes.
he wouldn't want this gig at all. So I am going with Jim Rockford to lead the team because the person that doesn't want to do the job is often the best person for the job.
Yes.
Right, you need somebody who can handle himself in a fight because they're always going to get in a fight. And this is, I don't want to go for B.A. Baracus because we've already got the face man.
Right.
So I need somebody else who's like strong enough to be able to handle themselves in a fight, but also has a bit of character to them. Or somebody who can avoid the fight if possible.
Right.
See, now that's a much harder proposition. If I'm not going for BA because we've already got face, I'm inclined to go for. I'm going slightly out of the era here, but I'm going for Sam Axe in Burn Notice,
Oh, okay.
which was Bruce Campbell, who's a little bit gone to seed and a little bit. Just taking the money at this point and cashing the checks. But if we're fitting this in the 70s, 80s era, then he was a bit more in his prime then. And I think Sam Axe could probably handle himself in a fight.
Absolutely.
Totally going down with that. You need a good. You've already got somebody who's good with the weapons with Kid Curry, but you need somebody who's good at army, good at going in and storming the joint. I'm going with the professionals, Bodie and Doyle. Which was a
Oh,
British TV show that you probably aren't familiar with, but I
no,
loved The Professionals as a
the
kid.
professionals.
So I'm having Bodie and Doyle on the team as the guys who go in and get shit done when it needs to be done. Then we need glamour, don't we? We need a little bit of glamour if this is a 70s, 80s TV show. But we also need a little bit of glamour who can handle her own. So let's bring in Jamie Summers, the bionic woman.
Well, there's and your muscle there too. Absolutely.
Yeah, but she's more covert. You keep
That's
her
true.
in the background because they don't expect that the pretty blonde. And I'm acknowledging that there's a thread running through this show, and you don't expect her to be able to do the stuff that she can do. So I'm going for Jamie Summers. So there you go. There's my team. Control's pulling the strings. Faceman can get you the stuff that you need. Sam Axe is your muscle. Kid Curry's your gunman when you need a quick job done, one and done. The professionals are going in all guns blazing, and Jamie Summers is your ace in the hole.
Wow, that's a great team. I love it. Well, I'm glad you got that exercise because I think after all those references, I was like, we have to bring that back. So yeah, I kind of called an audible about halfway through. I was like, no, I'm gonna scratch out this mystery question and change it. So good. That was a great, and you seem to have those going right there. You had them ready. So clearly you've thought about this at some
Oh
point in
yeah,
life.
one of my favorite things is if you could do that kind of Marvel crossover, with old shows like that. I would
Sure.
absolutely love Kolchak to be investigating like the Incredible Hulk. Like Kolchak reads about the Hulk in Jack McGee's newspaper
Yeah.
and he goes and investigates what the hell this is. I would
Oh, that's
absolutely
interesting.
be down for that. I would
That's so
totally be up
interesting.
for Kolchak going investigating the Incredible Hulk and the X-Files, Mulder reading about all these deaths in Sunnydale. And Mulder and Scully showing up in Sunnydale and Buffy being like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. I would have loved an X-Files Buffy
That
crossover.
would be a great crossover. That
Yeah,
would be
and
a
they always
terrific
have these
crossover.
arbitrary rules as well, is you can't do it with shows that weren't on the air at the same time.
Yeah.
So I
Not.
wouldn't have Kolchak go to Sunnydale because they weren't on the air at the same time. It would have to be
That would be
Mulder
the
and Scully.
X-Files. Gotcha. Gotcha. Very good. That's awesome. Well, any other, where are they going to drive?
What are they going to drive?
Yeah, they're going to have a couple of
Oh.
cars. Give me two
Well, Jim
cars.
Rockford's got his Pontiac
Yeah,
Trans
he's,
Am.
I love that Pontiac. Yeah, that was great.
And Faceman's got his Corvette.
That's true.
So
Yeah.
those two are sorted
Yeah.
already. So the other three is kind of thumbing a
Yeah.
lift, aren't they?
And
Like David
well,
Banner.
you know, Jamie Summers is riding with Faceman in the Corvette.
Oh yeah, Jamie's with
Right.
Faceman. But the thing is with Jamie though, Jamie's got no time for Faceman shit.
Yeah,
That's
I
where the
know. Yeah.
humor comes from.
Yes.
Jamie is
Yes.
never falling for someone as obvious as Face.
No,
She's
but that would be a
party
great
classy.
pairing. That would be a great pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, she's riding with Face Man.
Yep.
Sam Axe can go with Jim Rockford, just constantly winding him up.
Yep.
That would be amusing. The
Yeah.
professionals had the Ford Capri.
Oh, okay. All right.
So they can drive in their own Ford Capri. So you've got like a fleet of vehicles, but I've got
Yeah.
nowhere in this for Knight Rider, man, and I need Kit.
Oh.
I need Kit in there somewhere. Maybe that can be a crossover.
Yeah.
Maybe
Maybe.
they can meet up with Kit for some kind of, because
Yeah.
Stringfellow Ark's not interested. Stringfellow Ark's not interested in being part of the team. He doesn't give a shit. He blows up stuff in Airwolf on his own. He doesn't need anyone else.
I thought Airwolf would come into this. I was waiting for an Airwolf
But
reference,
he's not
but
a team
okay.
player
That's true. That's true.
by
Yeah.
any stretch of the imagination. So there's no way he's joining a team.
That's true. That's true. Well, he could be occasional air support if they need him. They could
Yeah,
call him
when
in.
you absolutely positively get
Yeah.
2 minutes before the end of the episode and you need to blow shit up, you
Yeah.
call it.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, Andrew, it's closing time.
One
So,
last call for alcohol, so
yep.
finish your whiskey or beer.
Yeah, or like if you're in the States, this is where they turn up the lights and the bartenders just tell everybody to
Just
get the F
kick
out.
you
Yeah.
out, yeah.
So anyway, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. This was so much fun. I'm really happy you decided to do this. And of course, I have to say happy holidays, because again, this is going to come out right around Christmas, New Year's, right around the
Yeah,
time. If
Merry
you're what
Christmas, everybody.
yes, what's I'm
And a
sorry,
Happy New Year.
what is the name of that time between Boxing Day and New Year's? What's it called again?
Crimbo Limbo.
Crimbo Limbo?
Yeah,
Crimbo
because
Limbo?
Christmas is shortened to Crimbo.
Okay. And then,
So we shorten Christmas to Crimbo. And Limbo is, we're in limbo. We've got no work
gotcha.
to do. We've got nothing to do. So Crimbo Limbo. It's
Okay.
the best week of the year.
All right, very good. Well, this is probably going to happen sometime around. This is probably going to drop sometime around Crimbo Limbo. So,
Well, which is fantastic because it gives people something to do in Crimbo Limbo.
it does.
It's like
It
you
does
are
give people some.
providing a public service, my friend.
I am. You're all welcome. You're all welcome, everyone. So, again, thanks again. Happy holidays. So why don't you tell us where can people find you?
I'm on Facebook, I'm on Threads, I'm on Instagram. Say hello. I'm not an ogre. I'm moderately friendly, despite what I said earlier about not liking people. I mostly like comic people.
There you
Most of
go.
you guys are okay. I mean, there's that one guy that we don't talk about,
Well, yeah.
but most of you guys are okay. So come and say hello.
Right, except my dissertation I wrote on how everyone should enjoy the Clone Saga, right? Wasn't that the one thing you said
Get
everyone
out. Just go away.
thought?
Yeah, so I'm on social media. You can come and say hello. Hey Kids Comics is every month. That's me and my son Michael talking about whatever the hell we want to talk about. It runs the gamut from Spider-Man to Japanese manga. It's very cosmopolitan. You never know what you're going to find. Michael Bailey and I do the Overlooked Dark Knight, which is looking at overlooked Batman stories. That's a lot of fun. And the Amazing Spider-Man from the very beginning, if this is going out in Crimbo Limbo, will have literally just dropped its last episode on the week before Christmas Eve.
Oh, no. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I figured you can't keep calling the show Amazing Spider-Man from the very beginning when you're 100 issues in. So I've ended it when Stan Lee left. I've chosen to bring it to a conclusion.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I listen, everyone out there in the Fantastic Lounge, that is such a great show. I highly recommend everyone the knowledge and the sheer love Andrew clearly has for that series is palpable, and everyone should listen to that. It's a terrific show, as well as Hey Kids Comics, and I don't know why I can't say that. Hey Kids Comics and The Overlooked Dark Knight. They're all great shows. So absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for being on the show. We're going to take another promo break and talk about a show that Andrew's ending, and we'll be right back.
Hey Kids Comics.
It was the dawn of a new age of comic book podcasting. Hey Kids Comics was a dream given form, a place where two generations of comic book fans could work out their differences peaceably. It was a humorous place where nothing was sacrosanct, and it was our last, best hope for joy. But all things end. But from endings can come new beginnings. This is the return of a comic book podcast. The year is 2023. The name of the show is Hey Kids Comics. Michael and Andrew are back with an all-new look at old comics and all old looks at new comics. You can go home again. Hey Kids Comics, monthly from Two True Freaks, and wherever you get your comics-related podcasts.
Hey Kids Comics!
And we're back. If you like what you heard, support the Fire & Water Podcast Network on Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name-checked on the show of your choice. My fellow network all-star, Sean Ross, has chosen the Fantastic Four, and I'm told his New Year's resolution is to really turn up his dairy consumption. Way to go, Sean. If you, dear listener, choose Fantastic Four, I will get you your very own holiday, or I will at least find some fun way to mention your name on the show every episode. Now, before I read the feedback, I wanted to take a moment. This year has been a particularly tough year for me, personally, as well as, and I understand for many of us, it's been a tough year. I love doing the Fantastic Four, and I'm so grateful for the support and friendship of my fellow hosts here at the Fire and Water Network, and for the patience and enthusiasm of all my guests. And I'd be remiss, of course, if I didn't say thank you to my incredibly supportive and amazing wife, Melissa, who has to hear me say things like, can you deal with the kids? I need to go up to the loft and drink scotch and talk about Spider-Man for a couple hours. And of course, you know, I have to thank each and every one of you who listen. I am sincerely in awe that so many amazing people listen, comment, when you put something of yourself out there in the world and you actually receive positivity back, that's an amazing thing. It really is. And I don't take it for granted. And I greatly appreciate each and every one of you for listening and for commenting and for supporting this show. It really means a lot to me. Thank you. And all right, enough with the mushy stuff, I guess. So now, here is the feedback from episode 13 with Rob Kelly featuring Santa Claus and a Yoo-Hoo cocktail. Last episode's very guest and dreaming of a white Christmas, FW Godfather Rob Kelly says, best episode ever. Couldn't say it better myself, Rob. He's got silver bells. Edo Boznar says, a fine holiday episode with a fine guest discussing a fine comic and drinking a fine beverage. Actually, on the latter, I'm thinking hot cocoa with a little nutmeg might be a better way to go. Hey, man. You know, I don't pick the ingredient. That was up to Rob, and you know he loves his Yoo-Hoo. Although I haven't read this particular issue of JLA, I have read some of the Len Wein's run on the title, as well as his excellent Phantom Stranger stories. I totally agree with Rob on that. So I'm sure this is an entertaining story. And yes, Dylan is a, well, fine artist. I've always liked his work, and when I was a kid, he was Mr. JLA to me. I couldn't believe it later when I started frequently comic blobs and comic blogs and forums and listening to podcasts that he has so many detractors. I didn't know that either. He shouldn't. By the way, I love Rob's idea for turning that tired Hallmark holiday movie formula on its head. Having someone with a small town come to the big city, my suggestion is having some country bumpkin fall for an Uber or Lyft driver or street food vendor who's an immigrant from one of those so-called shithole countries. Sorry if that's too political. It must be all the Yoo-hoo I've been drinking since listening to your episode. But you don't have to apologize to me, you know. Yeah, well, I'll be honest. I am a big fan of the Hallmark Christmas movies, and it doesn't have anything to do with any underlying political themes. But I don't know. I like the decorations. I love the niceness of them. It's just something different. So I always like to settle under a blanket and enjoy a few of those every Christmas. So anyway, He Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. Chris Franklin of Supermate says, great episode, gents, and great kickoff to the holiday season. I appreciate the toy talk at the end and Brett's offer for the superpowers figures, but I have those. If you come across a cyborg, keep me in mind. And I've never bought a carded cyborg for $3,000 either, because I too think that's a bit nuts to pay for that. I hope the fantasy JLA pinball game has an action that makes the satellite spin around when the ball drops into the hole beneath it. That would be cool. This is a favorite story of mine as well. I first encountered it in the same Best of DC Digest 22. This is my first introduction to Jon Stewart, and it's actually only his second appearance after Green Lantern Green Arrow 87, and quite possibly The Phantom Stranger. It was reprinted in Christmas with the Superheroes number 1 from 1988, and that's the version I reread to my kids over and over every Christmas for many years. I used to wonder how Jon's refurbished buildings would stay intact longer than the usual constructs. And in fact, my son Andrew asked me how this worked one time when I read it to him. I think Ween's reasoning was he used his ring as a tool to reconstruct the materials of the building. So that's not any ring construct nails in the structure. For instance, it's a flimsy no prize, but I think it works. Yeah, that's kind of what I assumed. I assumed that he used his ring as a tool to rebuild everything. But anyway. I enjoyed the spotlight on Dick Dillon. One thing I really appreciate about his art is that he adapted to the current way characters were being drawn in their titles. His work took on more of a Neil Adams-like look once that became the DC house style, for instance. He probably tops almost any comic artist for the number of lead characters drawn monthly for an extended amount of time between JLA and his runs on Blackhawk, World's Finest, and even DC Comics Presents shortly before his death. Again, great show, fellas. Thanks, Chris. Doing the Jingle Bell Rock, Paul Kien of DC Special Cast says, outstanding episode, Brett, as usual. And the guest was okay, too. Yeah, I agree. Seriously, this was a great discussion. I'm not much for Yoo-hoo, but I love me some Bronze Age JLA. This was one of the earliest JLAs I bought. I think I started around 105 or so, and I was blown away, no pun intended. I love these 100-page super spectaculars. That's how I learned about DC Comics history. Chris stole my thunder about this being Jon Stewart's second only appearance. I remember thinking as a kid how cool it was and what a boss move at the end, reconstructing the houses. I also agree with Chris that I never thought the houses were ring constructs, but that he somehow took all the raw materials that were blown up and rebuilt the actual houses. Thinking about it as an adult, it doesn't make much sense, but I wish more heroes did real heroic stuff like that. It did make me a big Jon Stewart fan. The heroes sacrificing themselves was always just a great part of the story, too. Just awesome. This is one of those stories that I reread almost every year. It's just a classic. You guys did it proud. Oh, and Dick Dillon, awesome artist. My JLA in my head is his. Not the flashiest, and I agree some of the poses can be wonky at times, but just an amazing body of work. I knew he had drawn Blackhawk before JLA, but to find out that his Blackhawk run over two companies was actually longer than his JLA run blew my mind. All he wants for Christmas is you, Dr. Ann says. Happy holidays, gents. First off, who would ever pick Yoo-hoo out of the 7-Eleven drinks when Strawberry Quick was right there next to it? Strawberry Quick for the win. Ugh, I hate strawberry stuff. I hate strawberry flavored stuff. I like strawberries. Anyway, I digress. Never quite understood how the key was such a threat. He seems like a complete morph. The headpiece doesn't help. It's a keyhole shape. Surely that opens him up to quips about putting things in his hole, no? Morrison did him an upgrade in the JLA run. Yes, he did. Dick Dillon was one of the first artists whose style I could recognize and associate with a name before I began routinely looking at credits. Loved his time on the JLA so much that when I opened up JLA 184,
before I knew Dylan had passed, I was jarred by the style of the new artist. Who is this poser taking over my boy Dylan? I asked. It was George Perez, of course. As for the secret questions, and Ange, they're fantastic questions. Anyway, JLA pinball machine, for sure the splash from JLA 200 is there, but I think on the side of the body, it's really landscape. I think the cover of Morrison's JLA 1 would be the top portion where the score is. And I think the pieces of a blown up red tornado have to be down by where the hole is that your ball goes down when you lose. Hallmark movie. I wanted to see a super couple, Supergirl and Brainiac 5 come to mind, who are tossed through time, one in the distant past, one in the distant future, as each battle to return to their proper time. We see flashbacks of them loving and supporting each other through life. When they finally both succeed, they both reappear on Christmas Eve just before midnight and under the mistletoe. They say something corny like, "What took you so long?" or "You are the best present," pun intended, "I could ever get." Kiss, credits. Jingling All the Way, Robert Louis McCarthy says, at SF State Bookstore, there was a half bottle of Yoo-Hoo on the counter for 9 years. Nobody drank it. Nobody moved it. Nobody even seemed to know it was there. I won't lie. When I finally graduated, I thought about drinking it. There was no time. Well, Robert, I think that's one of the reasons you're still with us, is that you didn't drink that. That's probably a good move. Having a holly jolly Christmas, Bucky749 says, for my next intro, how about saying I'm the guy on the floor playing with Frankenstein and Shazam Mego dolls? Well, Bucky, I don't control this. This is all organics, part of the Fantasta Lounge. We're in Christmas mode right now, buddy. Here's a fantastic question. See, Bucky gets it. Fantastic question. If you could have some custom art for the lounge with a Santa team up, like a Brave and Bold cover style, who would you choose? Well, I got Santa and Superman signed, the DC Comics Presents signed by JLGL in Baltimore about 2 years ago that I gave to my son. So that would be nice. Other than that, maybe Santa just teaming up with my kids. I think that'd be pretty cool. Thanks, Bucky. Letting It Snow, Super Captain says, always good to hear Robert Kelly. Did he call him Robert Kelly? No, sorry, Rob Kelly. Talking comics once again on the network. I don't think I ever had a Yoo-Hoo since I've had an actual allergy to chocolate as a kid, which did go away as I got older. Well, I'm glad to hear that. My wife, a noted chocoholic, claims that marrying her provided the cure. Maybe it did. For me, the story is always the one where Green Lantern slips on the shower and knocks himself unconscious. One of those great, that really happened moments in comic history. Alan Scott's weakness may be a wooden stick, but Hal Jordan's is a bar of soap. Forget all that yellow impurity business. Great show as always, Brett. Happy holidays. Thanks, Super Captain. He'll be home for Christmas, Lucien Dessart says. I really love this episode. Way to go get the Godfather on the podcast to wrap up the year. I was surprised Rob didn't select Aquaman and went with Saint Nick as a character to base the drink off of. Although a fish-like cocktail might be a bit bleh. Yeah, I agree. I also like the Yoo-Hoo ingredients being used. I would never have guessed that it would work. Justice League of America 110 is a great issue as well. Excellent choice. I listened to this while driving from Brooklyn, Staten Island to do errands, and this helped pass the times I was stuck in highway track for a long time. So thank you. That's wonderful to hear, actually. I think it's so cool that some of you listen at times where it helps pass the time or gets you through something. I know that's a simple thing that you were just stuck in some traffic, Lucien, but that makes me so happy to hear it really does. Thank you. Bringing the figgy pudding, Nate the Great says, ah, yes, the issue where Hal Jordan had Peter Parker level luck. I bet it was yellow soap. You know, I always thought of Phantom Stranger as the guy who had to save the JLA's butt when they were really in trouble, and I guess you could add John Stewart to that. Yes, Dick Dillon was underappreciated like Jim Aparo and Don Newton, all those characters. You know, you could actually do an Aquaman Hallmark movie. He has to choose between Mara and, say, a hot, normal blonde girl from the land. Never had Yoo-Hoo either. Looking forward to Rob's Aquaman episode and maybe a Legion Girls one, too. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Yeah, Nate, I would love for somebody to choose a Legion character. I'd love to do something with the Legion of Superheroes, hopefully in the near future. He saw three ships come sailing in. Chris Mort says, fun episode. I expected more out of Santa, but I guess he served his purpose for the story. I always wondered about GLs using their rings to fix stuff. Like Hal, recreating Coast City. How long did these constructs last? While I love the JSA, their backup was a little too vintage for me. Keep up the great work. Looking forward to more great shows and great drink recipes. Thank you, Chris. Mele Kaliki Maka, Martin Gray says, I enjoy the history of Yuletide drinking, but the actual cocktail of the month, while cleverly named, sounds awful. Thanks, Martin. Way to sugarcoat it. It's already starting at a low point, as every time Yoo-hoo is mentioned, I hear Uhu, a British brand of glue. It's always fun when the podcast goes totally Miss Othmar with sports talk, but when you shout out my name, thanks so much. You're welcome, Martin. I have no idea who Miss Othmar is. Cartoon. Those people who insist on animated series are the kind who want to call comic books graphic novels. They were cartoons and comic books when we came to love these things. Why would it be ashamed of it now? I love Dick Dillon. When I was a kid, I couldn't understand why he didn't get the same amount of praise as Neil Adams. They always looked great to me. Anyway, this JLA issue is so great, and the Dead Santa story is part of the greatness. I wish Len Wein had enjoyed a longer run as a writer. The Three Demons were mentioned in the passing of the show. Checked out last week's Justice League Unlimited. They're actually damned impressive for possibility for the first time ever. So a superhero Hallmark movie. How about Big Barda is Ms. Miracle, and she poses as Darkseid's nanny to ensure he grows up nice. Granny Goodness would be played by Candace Cameron Bure. I love Hallmark and the like. The festive film to avoid is Disney's One Magic Christmas. It'll have you booking that one-way ticket to Swiss Clinic 10 minutes, and it'll never get more depressing. I think the cover, I've never watched that, and now I never will. Thank you, Martin. I think the cover illustration from JLA 170 would do nicely for a pinball machine image. Everyone flying outwards in relation to the sun, or the logo Infinity cover from 217. Thanks for the Tony Bennett at the end. What a guy. Can the Velvet Fog be far behind? Thank you, Martin. And finally, Prospero Año, Sean Ross of Peacebound and Down says, great episode, Brett and Rob. I love this issue for two main reasons. John Stewart interacting with the JLA and Red Tornado's new costume. It was always a treat when Hal Jordan would be unavailable due to slipping on soap in the shower or standing in line at the free clinic. I love getting to see John in action in these early days before he became an A-lister. My big question about Reddy's new costume design is the arrow pointing down on his head. I call this my eyes are up here arrow. Thanks, Sean. Well, thank you all who listened. Be sure to subscribe to the Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and of course, leave a 5-star review. Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of the Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show. I'll read all feedback at the end of every episode. You can follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcast, or use our hashtag online at hashtag FW Podcast. I can be found on Instagram at Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thank you again to Andrew Leyland for hanging out at the Fantastic Lounge. It was a blast, and I wish you all a wonderful, wonderful holiday season. Until next year, the bar is open. The balls are ringing out for Christmas Day.